Good morning, everyone. I was reminded, just thinking about the theme for the day, that apparently people who are old are 10 years older than you are, if not more. Always, at any point, it's always... And then I was reading a book by John Lane, rereading it a couple of days ago on the plane, and Jim Lovelock said that whatever age you are, if you're over 80, said if there's nothing particularly wrong with you, you can expect to live another 3 years. And so it's sort of continuing basis. Anyway, we're here today to think about conscious aging and the wisdom of elders. And one of the reasons that I put this day together was I heard a summit on conscious aging through the Shift Network in March this year. And I don't know how many of you subscribe to the Shift Network, but there are some very good events. And this, they had people recorded interviews with various people, including Mary Catherine Bateson, who I'm going to say a bit more about in a moment. And then as for the shape of today, we've got four talks in the morning. Those of you who are astute comparers of programs will see there's no Tim Reed. Tim actually double-booked himself, and then he thought he was speaking on the Sunday rather than the Saturday, and so he said he could come, and then he realized he was actually speaking today, so he couldn't come. And so Maggie Latourelle, we've moved from this afternoon into this morning, she's not that well, so she's not here yet, I don't think. And then in the afternoon, we've got short presentations, and these are about 10 minutes each. And Beata, I'm going to read her presentation because you'll see why this is related to what she has to say. She's not well enough to be with us today, but I will give you her email so that if you'd like to send her a comment after you've heard what she has to say, which I think is great wisdom, then I'm sure she'd be really pleased to hear from you. And so we've got six presentations this afternoon, and then we'll just divide into small groups, put the chairs around so that people can go and talk with the speaker, they all move around if you like, but we've got then a good amount of time for that, so there'll really be plenty of time for your own input. And then at the end of the day, Natalie Tobert, who's going to come a bit later on, she's going to talk about her new book, Cultural Perspectives on Mental Health, which is at the back. So if you're interested in that, they're £20. And there are various other books at the back, also by the speakers, and other books which are sort of network review books. And there's some very good value books there. They're sort of £5, £10, and even these big encyclopedias used to be £85 and now £20. And so you'd be helping the network if you take some books away with you today. So that's the program. And so I think I'll just hit B, according to Peter. And it all comes up. How amazing. It's gone. hit B again, and then hit down. Yes, right. So one of the books that I've... If you've read your network review, done your homework, then you will realize that I had three books reviewed. One's Travels with Epicurus, one was this, and another was Divine Wisdom, I think it's called, by John Robinson. And this is a book by Mary Catherine Bateson called Composing a Further Life. Her original book was called Composing a Life, and you can understand the sense of compose there with this quotation here. Aging today has become an improvisational art form calling for imagination and willingness to learn. So this much more flexible and open. And in what she's done is she's added another stage to the Erikson stages of life. And she calls this adulthood too. And this is for her the age of active wisdom. And by that she means that we're in good health, we've got a lot of experience, and we've got a lot to share, we've got a lot of contribution that we can make, and so this is a time when you could really draw on the harvest of your life experience and pass that on to other people. Now, I particularly like this phrase, the age of active wisdom. And then she says that there are three crises that tend to come up at this stage. And one is related to a crisis of identity. Who am I? And I'll say more about that in the next slide. Crisis of relationships and intimacy. Everything's changing with where how things are evolving on a family front. And then a crisis of generativity, which is contribution. And how are you going to continue to contribute? And this is particularly acute, more so, I think, for men. And I can think of a friend of mine who was head of a school, and he suddenly went from being sort of epicenter of activity and decision making to, you know, having to organize his day without any structure. And he found that extremely difficult. And so then there's also the generativity with this as well. And typical for a Bateson, when you think of Gregory Bateson, the father of Mary Catherine Bateson, and William Bateson, who the grandfather was professor at Cambridge, who in the early 1900s invented the term genetics. And so he was the man who actually coined the phrase genetics. The radical interdependence is something that comes up in the Bateson thinking. And I'm just reviewing another book at the moment by Nora Bateson, who's the half-sister of Mary Catherine Bateson. And it's called Arcs and Circles. And it's given me a new insight into the real interdependent relationships that we constitute. And so she's saying that interdependence and independence is really a myth. We're never completely independent. We are embedded in family systems, in social systems, in all sorts of other systems. And as you become reach the sort of more departure lounge stage, as someone say, then you become more dependent. And people dislike this. It's very annoying to become dependent. And yet, what she suggests is that this is actually a lesson in humility. So there's a spiritual component. And I'm struck by this phrase here. Over the days that followed, I found myself meditating on the ways in which aging often strips us of whatever has made us feel valuable and lovable. It struck me that taking responsibility and getting things done to meet the needs of others, being useful, had been central to this person. But what we need to realize, this is her writing here, in this stage, is that this experience of dependence is the door to a wisdom of humility. I love that. It's a door to a wisdom of humility. The discovery that we are loved by God and by our families beyond the loss of those traits we value in ourselves and even beyond the point of active contribution. I think that's a hugely sensitive thing to say. And so she suggests that what we need to do is to affirm our life, affirm what we've done with our lives, affirm love given and received, and then affirm our death as well, the transience of life. And this, of course, is what we're really bad at as a society. And we're very good at affirming life, affirming contribution, but we're not so good at affirming death. So a little more on the question of identity. This is Mary Catherine Bateson. Am I still the person I've spent a lifetime becoming, and do I still want to be that person? What an interesting question. Am I still the person I've spent a lifetime becoming, and do I still want to be that person? And she suggests that without reshaping our sense of identity, we die before our death by ceasing to be ourselves. And so we really have to redefine our purpose and meaning, calling, and inner orientation. And also what our legacy is going to be. And that can be at a number of different levels. And so I think she's hit on something extremely important here, because obviously one's identity is something that continues to evolve throughout one's life. And what you find yourself in different situations and therefore with different relationships as you move through the caravan, as they say in the Sufi tradition. Then I've recently been reading a biography of, or rereading a biography of Jung, which I reviewed in about 6 months ago. And those of you who've read Modern Man in Search of a Soul will remember that the basic challenge that Jung talks about in his patients in the second half of life is coming to, or is finding a spiritual outlook. And so this is really the challenge. And I think it's a phase when you move more from outer orientation to inner orientation. Of course, everybody is going to do that at a different speed, if you like. But the emphasis, I certainly find this myself, the emphasis moves from the outer towards the inner. And so that silence and contemplation and stillness, I think, become more important. And he says here, to live one's self is to be one's own task, which I think is. So we are all, in a way, our own task, but within the context of this interdependence and the various different kinds of relationships that we have. And then I very much like this thought from Jung. In the final analysis, we count for something only because of the essential we embody. And this, again, is sort of archaeologically digging down into the depths of oneself. What is it that can come through, which the personality can be a vehicle of, but the personality can step aside, and so something else can come through. And I think I do agree with Jung that there is this journey towards wholeness, journey towards integration. I mean, it's never quite finished, and I don't know how many of us will finish on a chord, if I can put it that way, a split chord or otherwise, because one of the analogies I like to use is that our lives are like a fugue, like a Bach fugue, and so we have these different subjects intertwining with each other. But whether the composition comes to a neat end is a very sort of moot point. But at any point in life, one can continue to grow. And these are some thoughts from Thomas Troward. The law of growth is the creative force throughout nature. And so that whatever phase we're in, then we can actually continue to grow. Life can continue to flow through us. And I'm reminded in this context of a very old tree that we have in Scotland. And this tree has been propped up for almost as long as I can remember. And it has a telegraph pole underneath it, otherwise it would simply fall to the ground. But every year, new life comes through that tree. And so I think even if there's only one branch that's working still, it's still important to be open for life to come through us. My last image will repeat that point. And so this creative process is something that we can continue to engage in and over the course of our lives. And this was well expressed by Goethe. When this is often quoted, some of you will remember, by Sir George Trevelyan, "Wer nicht dies hast, stirb und werde, bist du nur, wenn du das nicht hast, sorry, stirb und werde, bist du nur ein trüber Gast auf der dunklen Erde," as George used to say. So this is about dying and becoming. If you do not grasp this, die and become, then you are a dismal guest on the dark earth. And so Goethe really understood this whole issue of metamorphosis, of being able to move through the cycles of life and be renewed. And you can see this, for instance, in the image of the apple. And one thought I always like to ponder on is, we can see how many seeds are in the apple, but how many apples are there in the seed? Because the apple is the microcosm, as it were, of further development, and you have the same thing, and then the leaves in the autumn, And then I just wanted to say a little bit about Walter Russell and his idea of periodicity. And those of you who have heard me in the last 2 or 3 years will know that I talk about Walter Russell quite a lot. His work is unrecognized and extremely profound. I'm just reading his major work at the moment at about two pages a day, and it's called The Universal One, and is absolute work of genius in terms of the science and philosophy. But the what I want to explain and express here is this the rhythm of life in terms of the way and the alternation between the unfolding into form, which is this is the first movement of the panurhythmi, which is awakening. So you could see this unfolding process. And if you think of a flower or a tree, then the gesture of life opening is this gesture. And it comes from the center. It comes from the ground and comes up the earth. And then in the autumn, everything, the life refolds back into the earth. And so this really applies at all levels. So it's birth and death. It's the coming into form and then the disintegration of form. But the form gets recombined. And I was thinking of this yesterday because I went to an exhibition of Scottish paintings in Sotheby's with my daughter Charlotte. And I thought to myself, here is an extraordinary collection of Picasso ceramics and modern art from Richard Attenborough. Amazing. A collection of work. And I thought, well, here is this whole collection being dispersed. You know, somebody has... But then in a way, it's the same thing. These works came together in Richard Attenborough's ownership. They're offered at Sotheby's. They go out, and then they become part of somebody else's collection. And so there's both a this recombination. So the life, the art is never lost. It's simply recombined and expressed in a different context. And the same with the seed, the expansion and contraction. So you've got the expansive move, the radial move, and the gravity move towards the center. So if you express this in a spiral, the spiral would go out like that. So there's a movement from the center out, but there's also a corresponding movement from the periphery inwards. And these two balance each other in life. And so we, as bodily systems, we are balanced between the expansion and the contraction. And you can see that even in terms of our waking and sleeping and so on. And so it's the same process of creation and generation and destruction. And then in terms of life, it's also about acquiring things and shedding things. I'm going through a shedding phase at the moment, where I kind of downsized, moved to France, and I'm passing a lot of family things over to my children. And so I've been able to look after them for a time, and now it's their turn to look after them. And then the symbolism of the compost, I just want to mention. Some of you might have been at Mystics and Scientists when, well, certainly the Fenwicks were, when Houston Smith spoke about 10 years ago, and he said, my spiritual practice is composting, and I do this all the time, you know, so the rotting vegetables then get put in the compost, and what comes out of that? New life. And so wherever the cycle of life is operating, you always have the new, you always have birth coming out of death and transformation. So I like that very much. And the thought, and this is, again comes from my experience, that wisdom is ripeness rather than desiccation. So I don't think we want to dry out as we get older. But so the question is how to remain juicy. And I'm sure Di will have a thing or two to say about that. And this really, you can remain juicy by life flowing through you. And one of my most striking experiences was meeting Brother Boris Nikolov, who was a Peter Dunov disciple, when he was about 91. And I went to his house in Sofia. And as soon as I entered the room, I was immediately enveloped in this atmosphere of love that was coming out of him. He was sitting there and just radiating this presence. And that doesn't happen automatically as a matter of course. It happened in his case because of a lifetime of dedication and inner work. But what a gift. What a gift. How can we be that kind of gift? I should mention that at the back, there are copies of my book on Peter Dunoff, and also another one called The Teacher, which is a compilation of his early lectures. So those, if you're interested, they're at the back. And then I'll just leave you with a couple of quotations. Ecclesiastes, by the way, I'm not going to quote all that, but it's about there being a time for everything. And I think that's something that one comes to realize more deeply as one goes along the journey. And so leave you with Epicurus. I like these two quotations. Nothing is enough for the man to whom enough is too little. Nice reflection. And then finally this, not what we have, but what we enjoy constitutes our abundance. So everybody can have exactly the same thing, but if you don't enjoy it, then what's the point? So that these come from Travels with Epicurus, which is the second book I reviewed in that series of books, which is recommended to me by Ian McGilchrist. And then finally, another image for you. Many of you will have seen these extraordinary olive trees. And so how old is this tree? Several hundred years. A lot older than we can become physically. Life is still coming through it. It's rooted in life, and life still flows through it. So that's my message, that life can flow through us at any moment. Thank you very much.